My name is Alison Jones, and I'm interviewing Albert Richard Calvert for the Dialect and Heritage Project on Tuesday, the 14th of June, 2022. Albert, can you introduce yourself to me?
I am Albert Richard Calvert. I'm 94 years old. I was born in West Scrafton in Coverdale, and moved to Preston-under-Sker as a month old on the 10th of May, 1928. And I've lived in the Yorkshire Dales all my life and worked. I was worked as an apprentice joiner at Redmire and worked for a small joinery company where we did generally farm work. We were decorators, undertakers, joiners, and we did all that type of work. There was very little work in the area over them years. We never built houses. The first house that I was ever involved with, a new house, was the Carpaby Council Houses, and that would be in 1946-47. And I worked for George Jones for 18 years, and then I moved to Castle Bolton and lived in Castle Bolton until 2 years ago, when I moved back into Leyburn. And now I'm involved. I started a company, we are Calvert Leyburn Limited Builders, and that's what I'm still working to a small amount of work that I'm able to do, and that's where I am today.
Oh, fabulous. So what did your parents do?
My dad was the man that I talk about a little bit in here. My father was a farm labourer, and he was a shepherd. And he worked for Burnett's at Preston-under-Sker for 15 years, where I was brought up. And then he moved away, and he lived in Lancashire and the borders of Lancashire, where he farmed on his own farm until the day he passed away.
Gosh, and what did you farm? What?
General farming in this area. There's milk cows. When I was a little lad, there was no big milk farmers. A large one would be probably a man who milked 25 cows. Burnett would milk about 25 cows that my dad worked for. But all the people who lived in the village, well, not all of them, but most of the people who lived in the village would have a cow and a small piece of land and go out to work for someone else. The work in the area at that time was, I mean, it was in the 20s, there was a recession, you see, and that was very, very, people were very, very poor. We were poor. But we were very fortunate living in the country. You could grow stuff in your garden, you had your hens and you kept a pig and things like that, and you got through that way, but there was no money. No money at all. So if I'd passed my exams to go to Yorbridge Grammar School, which I had no chance of passing, I wouldn't have been able to go because we couldn't have afforded to go. And that's how education was. The education was difficult in them days. To get ahead on education, it wasn't there for the ordinary person.
No.
And that's how life was.
Oh, gosh. If, with school, where did you go to school to begin with? What was your first school?
I set off, I can remember the day, I can tell you the day. He sent me to the shop and I can't remember two things. But I can remember the day I went to the shop and I can remember the people who took me. I went to, set off to walk from Preston-under-Sker to Wensley, because you walk in short trousers till you left school. A boy called Thomas Thurlow and Rita Turner took me to school. And that was my first day at Wensley School. And I stayed there until I was 14. I left at 14. I was one of the last people to leave at 14.
Yeah.
School, right. Wensley High School. When anybody asked me where I was educated, I say Wensley High School. Mm-hmm. The only thing about it by is High on the Hill. Right, as you come down, you come from Ashwick, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
When you turn at Wensley, the building on the right-hand side is a school. It's a house.
House now.
Yeah.
But in those days. And was it associated with the church opposite?
Yes. Yeah. Well, the church, not this church,
no,
went to church. Yes. I mean, we went a great day on, now then. What would it be? Ascension Day, was it? I think it was Ascension Day. We all went to school in the morning, and at 10 o'clock we went down to Wednesday School to a service, and then we went home. Then that was a great day,
end
a day to look
day.
Forward to, because you got the day. Shrove Tuesday, it would be, because Ash Wednesday was the following day. So what would it be? Yes. And that was it. You see, and the rector at Canon Fitzhugh, he was, used to come into church, into school occasionally. A brutal man.
Really?
Yes. If there was any problem, he would come up and cane people.
Yes.
Yeah, that's how it was. Yeah. And the teachers, you see, we had two teachers. We used slates when we were in the infant room. Miss Taylor was our teacher there, a lovely person. The people, they weren't highly educated themselves, weren't teachers in them days. Miss Metcalfe was a nice lady. As the headmaster, he wasn't nice, because he judged us. I mean, he picked on two of us, always. It was because that was just a farm labourer. And you were at the bottom of the row, you see. Well, he would pick on you for any reason at all. You know, this, and I look back, John Rain and me were quiet lads. Neither of us were any trouble, but we would be the two. And I must tell you, he had a set of trains, Ornby trains, wonderful set, and probably twice a year he'd set them all out in the big room to go right round it. He had everything you could think of. And he would always have one boy who would be station master, and he was in charge to wind the train up and he'd be in charge of it. And I knew I'd never a chance to get in that, but always loved to see the little laddie. Of course he would. Of course he would. And this day came along and he shouted, "Craddock! Craddock!" And Bob wasn't at school. And somebody said, "He's not here, sir." And he says, "Calvert." Well, I was so excited. Because I was a nervous kid at any time. I wound the train up with the big key at the side, set it off, it went round, it knocked everything down because I left the key in. So it proved to him that he was right in saying that I'd never get anywhere, because he proved I was an idiot.
Oh.
And I was so disappointed. He clipped me round the ear.
Never again then.
No. No. I mean, that's how it was. I mean, people do. This is it. And then, of course, Miss Taylor came along. We moved away up to Bainbridge and were there for 6 months and came back and went to school. And by that time, left. He wanted you. And Miss Taylor had come. That way. And she lived with her mother. And we used to do the work in her garden. And her mother had heard and watched me and saw that I was an organiser and could work. She told her daughter, obviously, put you down wherever he could. But I did get the chance to put him in his place when he grew up. Because I never told you, I did run Bolton Castle for 12 years. I was the first one to go in there, and Miss Metcalfe, who'd always been nice to me throughout my life, as long as she lived, she always followed me, and she always said that I would do, you know, she had, said I was all right. And I wasn't probably the brightest kid in the thing, but that didn't matter. I had common sense. I could always say, well, I struggled at school, but I was never brilliant in any shape or form. Anyway, Miss Metcalfe came all of a sudden, because I was in charge of Bolton Castle. I was somebody great. And of course, Miss Metcalfe. But Herdis's youngest daughter, he had two daughters, Barbara was the older one. And, oh, I can't think what the other called. She felt sorry for me. And she always covered up for me when he was picking on me.
You needed a friend like that.
It's, yeah. So that's roughly where I am.
Yeah. So when you said your parents moved, you moved to Bainbridge.
Yes.
Why was that? Was that because of work?
Yes, or? for work. We lived at Radle Grange, up above Marsden.
Right.
Yes.
So what did you do for? Did you help your father with his work?
Right, well, when I was 10 years old, I started to work on the farm, because I wanted to be a farmer. That's what I wanted to be, you see. And I went out, and I worked with horses. My younger brother, he was 3 years younger than me, Derek. He was good with cows. I sat down to milk the quietest cow that ever was, and he kicked me. And so I never had anything to do with cows again. But horses, gentle giants, I used them from being 10 years old. And in summertime, I would work all summer holidays on the farm, and haymaking was at that time. Everything, there was no tractors, all was done by horses, and I used horses. Gosh. And at the end of the holidays, when we were going back to school, Mrs. Burnett used to bring me to Leyburn, and we went to Wilson and Campbell's, which is now Dennis Lambert's paper shop, you know, decorator shop there then. And she always bought me a suit of clothes, a pair of socks, and a shirt. And that was it. And that was what I got. I didn't get any money, but that's what I got. And that was the clothes that I used for the year. But that's what you did, you see. You only had one set of clothes.
Yeah, yeah.
You only had one pair of shoes.
So they weren't your Sunday best. They were just literally...
Well, you set off as your Sunday best, and then they would go for your things. But you only had one set of clothes. You only had one pair of shoes.
Gosh.
And I didn't have an overcoat. Because when my friend took me to Counton to his grandma's one weekend, and I hadn't an overcoat. And his mother gave me one. And that was the first overcoat I remember having. Well, I'd be 8 or 9. Well, I don't know. Yes, you did. You were bloody frozen still, because we were cold in school, in great big room. There was one fire at one end. And in the big room, there was two fires, that's right. And in the infant room, there was one.
Gosh.
Yeah. Gosh. So this is it.
And that was how it was warm. The school was warm.
Well, it wasn't warm. It was cold. No. Oh, there was no iron pipes. The only thing that was round was an iron fire fender round. Wow. So you could fire guard round the fire.
Yeah.
And that was it. Yeah. It was very cold, I'll tell you. And of course, there was no school dinners. You took your own dinner with you in a dinner bag. And in summertime, you got a cup of water with a spoonful of powder, lemon or orange powder, which I didn't like. And in winter time, you got a boiling water with a spoonful of Horlicks in.
And that was each day?
And I didn't like that either. And that was it. You took your own dinner.
What would you take? What sort of things?
Well,
would you
I mean, the thing is, You'd take just a sandwich, I would imagine, and a piece of cake or something like that. And that's what it was.
Your mum made it up for you and you...
Well, yes, but you see, and then when I got to be 10 years old, our mother ran away and left us. And so I was the oldest, so I had to bring my brother and my sister up, who were going to school, because my dad went out to work at 6 in the morning. He would come back for his breakfast when he finished milking at 8:30. We'd already gone to school. And then we'd come home at night, and my dad would come home at 6 o'clock, and that's when we all had a dinner. We did. We were better off after our mother left us than we were when she was there. and that's an honest fact. So I've seen all sorts of, and everybody thinks I'm brought up with a silver spoon in my mouth. They have no idea of life. But I like people, you see.
Yeah.
I like people. Yeah.
So what sort of evening meal would you have?
The thing is, we'd have a proper, we'd have some sort of, we always had bacon. And see, we always had eggs. We always had vegetables, you see. So during the war, I would imagine we weren't any different, little different to what we were before, because we didn't have money to buy things, you see. So this was it. Town people would struggle. But, I mean, I know my dad always bought a big joint of meat on the Saturday. And that's what, I can tell you, every Sunday what we had for our dinner, Sunday dinner, we had roast beef, Yorkshire puddings, we'd have some vegetables and potatoes, and a rice pudding. Because, you see, we got a jug full of milk a day in his pay. He lived in a tiny house, and this is what life was like.
He was paid with the milk?
He was paid 28 shillings per week, a free house, which, if you make any mistake, it could be turned out that very day. But fortunately, Burns were reasonable people to work for. Mm. But it did happen, regular clockwork. If you fell out with the boss, you were thrown out. You had no choice. You didn't have to go tomorrow. You were there. Because I remember my friend and me went out one night to shoot a pheasant with a catapult in the dark. We would go out greater. We went up in the Scarlet Wood behind Preston, that's on top of Scathnick, up on the top there. Shot into this, a pheasant drop out. Absolutely delighted we were. Absolutely delighted. Take this pheasant home. And my dad wouldn't have it, you see. I couldn't understand why my dad wouldn't have this pheasant. Could have eaten this pheasant, you see. And so, it was only when I grew up that I realised why he didn't have it. Because we always say, you could, in when you lived in them days, if you did murder, you'd get away with it. But catch a pheasant or any grouse or anything to do with the state, mm-hmm. you'd be found. Mm-hmm. And so I realised afterwards why you wouldn't have it in the house. Bob took it, he was all right, his dad worked at the quarry. They had it, no problem. But my dad would have the fear that if he was found out, it would go to court. Who was on the court bench? Lord Bolton. Who does this man work for? He works for William Burnett. Oh, William Burnett's a tenant of mine. That man goes. That's how life was,
yeah.
I'll tell you.
Yeah.
That's how life was. It was very different.
Gosh.
I mean, Bob Craddock, the lad who was friends with, there's three of us, we're friends all our lives. Thomas Thurlow, Bob Craddock, himself. There was other lads in the village and that, but we didn't fall out with them, but we all our lives stuck together until we're all until dead. Now, yes, that's it. Mm-hmm. We went together. Thomas went to Yorbridge, brilliant lad. Dozes, yeah, become great big tall lad, play all day, never say a word. You'd ask him, was he enjoying himself? Oh, he's having a great time, you know. Salt of the earth was Thomas. He joined the army. He was the oldest, so he was old enough to go in the army. Just at the latter end. And he was big fella, you know, quiet and very quiet. And when he joined the army, the sergeant put him in boxing with a little thick-set fella. And Thomas said, typical of Thomas said, he came at me like a bull. He said, so I whispered to him, don't eat so hard. He said, and he hit me again. So I thought he hadn't heard, so Thomas said, I whispered to him, don't eat so hard. He hit me again, so he said, I flattened him. That was Thomas.
You'd given him a chance, hadn't
you? Yeah, that was Thomas. That was the lad who took me to school. And his daughters both went to America. And him and his wife. His wife was 21st in the year. I was at the party. when it was a church hall. And he went. They went to America to live, and they were both killed in a car accident.
Gosh.
And Robert, the other lad, which I was talking about, he came to Preston under Scar when he was 8 years old. And I didn't realise this until years when we retired, and we used to meet probably twice a year. He used to come up to our house at Castle Bolton, and twice a year we'd meet. And Robert said that why his dad had come to Preston under Scar to live. His dad was a Preston man who had been in the First World War, and he came out and he married a person in Cowden, and that was a coal mining area, and he lived there. And Bob said for 8 years, as he went to school, he saw his dad outside on a row of men, and he thought his dad worked there. And he was standing there to see if he could get a day's work. And while he came to Preston, the quarry, we had a quarry at Preston under Scar, and he came because his brother had a horse, and down at the siding, the stone came from the quarry overhead into a crusher, and it went into the railway wagons, and a horse pulled them on, and he got that job. And that's how he came. And he'd been out of work all that time.
All that time.
But you see, at that time, miners used to come with a band into Preston probably once or twice a year, more or less in rags. I mean, as they do today, they still go around, but they go for uniforms. In them days, they were coming to earn a few pence to feed the families.
Gosh.
You don't realise.
Yeah.
I mean, I've talked to children at school until... told him, in them days you could get 240 ice creams for a pound. Because 240 pennies in a pound. So the world is a different place. Mm-hmm. A different place entirely.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks, you see, they complain about everybody will have an iPad, a telephone that can do everything, the great big televisions and everything they want, and they can't afford to live. And people say, but it isn't the young people's fault, they've never known anything else. You see, it doesn't bother us if we have nothing. I mean, when I started the company up, we had so little money coming in that our men would go away with. They would pay more tax than we were living off, Anne and me. but that's life, you see. They don't understand, but it was no problem.
No.
Yeah. You live off what you've got. You learn to live off what you've got.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't care if my next door neighbour has a great Rolls Royce or comes out. It doesn't bother me. As long as I've got a car that's a good car and doesn't break down. If it breaks down, I'm as mad as hell. Not to that extent, but yes, hungry, yes. Yes, 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 yes,
but
yes. Yes.
Yeah,
not to be hungered, no.
Yeah.
Not to be hungered, not to be hungered, no. But badly clothed, poorly clothed, I didn't have no. Mm-hmm. Well, you always had the shoes. Always had the shoes, so never were out. I mean, my dad used to repair our shoes. He would sell our shoes. He sold his own shoes. I remember he had a last. It wasn't, yeah. And I would come to Laban and buy leather from the cobblers, shoemakers, and do that.
When you say a last, what do you mean?
That is what a man, a cobbler makes his shoes on. It's a mold. You pop the shoes onto it. It's a metal thing onto it, you see.
Yeah.
I mean, when I went to Redmire to work, as a lad of 14, and during the war, there was no phones, you see. Nobody had phones. I used to take people's shoes, boots and shoes down to Redmire, to the cobbler, Tommy Hunter, take them down to him and collect them at night and take them back again and things like that. And during the war, when I came to school, there was at Wensley, there was the mill at Wensley. I would come and ask if we could... if Bernice could bring the corn, because then they had to grow corn, we never grew it before, could they bring it down for milling, you see, and things like that.
So what did they mill at Wensley?
Well, just ordinary wheat and things like that, whatever was grown. Mm. I mean, in the there must have been, you see, I don't remember any corn being grown until the war, but there must have been use for a mill before that. So it probably had been, but it wasn't anymore. To mill, which is the candle mill.
Oh yes,
that was it. That was what it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was it. Water powered, yes, of course it is, because it, the little bridge, as you come down and turn for Leyburn, you go over the little bridge, and you'd always see a kingfisher under there. When I was a child, and you see, the thing is, that's another thing I tell, I say to people, when we all seem to have snow, in the winter we got snow, I think we did as well, and so there was days when we couldn't go to school, and we used to feed the birds. There would be flags in front of the house, as area as big as that house, probably bigger, and you threw food out for the birds. And they came in hundreds, and when I say hundreds, I mean hundreds.
What sort of birds?
Blue tits, chaffinches, sparrows, any sort of bird you could think of. Crows came, we didn't like them. Or pheasants were always there.
Yeah.
Pheasants were always stale. But they were there, you see. Mm. And this is it. Now then, I try to attract birds to come here. And we have a bungalow at Bridlington, which we use. We go most weekends over there now, as we work all our lives, because we had property, so we had 12 holiday cottages that Anne had them, and I had to work on a Saturday to help her. She did them with help and run the company as well. We worked very hard for a long time, but we always closed for 2 weeks in summer when we went away, a week at Easter and the Christmas holidays, and we always went away. Now, our oldest daughter, she lives in Italy. She went to Italy when she left university. She's an archaeologist. Not anymore, because when she married, she couldn't do that because she had to go out on a Monday morning. And so she, when she married, she took up teaching English. To companies, and she's been there all that time. What, she's been well over 30 years in Italy. Northern Italy, she went to Novara to start with, and then she moved into Monza when she got married, and then she lives now up in Marate, and it's not far from Como. Lecco Como, up in the lake district.
Yes,
and so over the years, we've gone over there every summer, and we have a cottage up in the mountain village, Montevecchia, where Sarah's husband's family had always rented, and they'd moved away, and his cousins and that, so we took it over and we used that for a number of years, but we can't go down. And I motored down. I enjoyed that. Yeah. And then coming back, we called through Germany all sorts of things.
Can you remember your first holiday when, as a child?
Yes, I can remember my first holiday. That was the only place I ever went to, was my grandma's. That was at Cleesby.
Where's Cleesby?
Cleesby, just outside Darlington. Yes, you go to Darlington, you go through Stapleton. And please, we've got a mile up there.
And how long would you go for? Only
a week.
A week.
No more than a week, no more than a week.
And then fourth, and that would be your holiday for?
Yeah, my dad never had a holiday. He worked for Bernard for 15 years and never had a day off.
Gosh.
Never one day.
No.
You see, you work, but you didn't work on a Sunday. You did basic things. You wouldn't go to the moor on a Sunday, and you would never hay make on a Sunday. Hard to believe. You'd be in disgrace if you did.
Mm-hmm. The Sabbath.
Yeah, if it rained every day and Sunday was a super day, nobody went in. No. Mm. No. You would be in disgrace.
So how was your holiday time different to your... when you're not on holiday? What would you do when you got to your grandma's?
Well, I generally had 2 shillings. I remember that. This would be the latter end when I was sort of grown. The first thing after my breakfast, I'd go to Warrilow's shop and buy a bar of toffee. And when they moved to Evenwood, I went round the shop there, and I can tell you exactly what I bought, a Fry's cream bar. And I, tuppence the bar, and I still look, there's 2 things I still like, which were luxury to me, Fry's cream bar and Heinz tomato ketchup. And can't stick with your magic character.
Two of my favourite things. What games did you play in your childhood? Can you remember?
Well, I wasn't very good at sport, to be quite honest. I played cricket at school and football, but I was hopeless at everything. But we played shinty, and I loved playing shinty.
Now, what's that?
Now then, shinty is... like hockey, like a walking stick upside down, and a big hard ball. Well, not a big hard ball, a ball probably like that. And you played, it's like football. And we played with the girls, and by God, they hammer you. They're kicking. You watch them. We played that at Wednesday School, and we also had a maypole at Wednesday School. And so I can maypole dance. And if you look through, there is old papers during the war, when there was War Weapons Week, you did things to gather money to buy Spitfires. And there was a display once at Leyburn in the library. And somebody says, Albert, there's a photograph of you, maypole dancing. And I was the oldest boy in the because we maypoled and we sword danced. Well, sword dances were just oak slats. You did them, you turned and twisted, and it made like two squares together, and then you went round, you dropped it back down, each one got all of it and just pulled it out. And that's right, yeah. Yes. Oh, yes, it's folk dancing. Yeah. Yes, yeah. So we did that.
How old were you when you were doing that? When you
10-year-old.
10 years
old? 10-year-old, yeah. I'd be 10-year-old.
And someone would teach you?
Yes, oh, yeah.
And then but what it, music?
Oh, yes, oh, yeah.
Was that an accordion or a...
I don't know, but I can... we used to sing, come lasses and lads, get leave of your dads and away to the Maypole Eye. And every girl was about out there, the fiddler standing by. And I also was involved with pace-egging. Now then, that is an old traditional thing where you go around to houses, you black your faces, and you knock at the door, well, you have the pace-eggers in. Yeah, and so you go in, and that is 1, 2, 3 little jolly boys all in one line. We've come pace-egging, it's pace-egging time. With eggs and strong beer, we'll bring you good cheer, and we'll come no more at you until the next year. The next to come in is Lord Nelson, you see, with a star on his chest, like, and all that, you see. And then the last one to come in is old Mazzy, you see. She's come in her old clothes to save her money. She has gold and silver, but she keeps it in store, and she's come a pace-egging to try to get more. But we just sang that.
I love it. So was that coal you used to black
and... oh, aye, yes. Just soot.
Soot, yes, yeah.
And once, I've never heard of that.
So when would you have done that?
Well, I was from being 8-year-old up to leaving school, I would imagine.
And not at a particular time of year?
Yes, yes, I was in winter.
Always in the winter?
I was in winter.
And someone taught you that? You?
Yes, yes, it was Bob Craig's dad. Handed down, you see, because the words would all be different in each time, you see.
Right.
And that's it. But you were dressed up as... I was Lord Nelson, you see, with a star and his silver, just like silver does shine.
And would you make the clothes?
Of course. You wouldn't. And then we had three evacuees were there in that, because we didn't have many children in the village, you see. Sunderland, the camp from Sunderland, sent Bede School. And then we got also from, who's next town to Sunderland, Gateshead, where the Catholic children from Gateshead came. They obviously weren't well dressed.
No.
The Sunderland children were, because they came from a grammar school, you see, they were the high one. And lots of them stayed after the war, so they never went back. Yes, your teachers came with them, because when they first came, was just before the war. Evacuees came before the war, a few weeks before the war. The teachers came with them, and I think I mentioned it in here about when all the children came, there wasn't room in the school for everybody to go, so we went 3 days a week, and others went them other days, and things like that. Yeah.
So you take it in turns to be taught?
For a short period of time.
Did you teach the evacuees your rhymes or any?
No, I wouldn't even think of them.
No.
I wouldn't be thinking of things. It's only when you get older you've got time to look back at these things. Because they are, everything's ordinary. Mm-hmm. All history is ordinary. It's what you're doing today.
Yeah.
It's history tomorrow.
Yeah.
When you think of, when I was brought up, I have so many tales to tell about the characters that lived in it. You'd die with laughing. And some, I don't know whether I dare tell afterwards. But I've got to get around and write them down, get it written down.
Yes, keep them written down.
I can remember them as well as anything. I can, no problem at all. I can remember everything at work. I mean, no matter what it is, I don't forget it. Ordinary, my own. Only ordinary things that at home that I would forget.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose that's why I wasn't brilliant. I haven't a great memory. Yes, for these things, but for learning things. I'm absolutely... Give me instructions to put something together. It doesn't mesh in my head.
Mm-hmm.
I can put them together by looking at and sorting out how to do it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I've always done it with the work. We've 30 some staff. We did the job. Well, we had 60 some. And you see, and you organise that. I'm good at organising. I know how to basically organise. You see. I suppose it is. Yeah.
So how did you get into the job that you did? How did that?
What
your first job?
To be a joiner.
Well, yeah, was that the first job you did when you left school?
Yes. I had the chance of two places to go to. Chapelows at Leyburn, they were just straightforward joiners and builders. Because Kit Chapelow had always known me, because he married Bernard's daughter, oldest daughter, you see. And he wanted me to go to work for him. He was very disappointed when I didn't. And my next door neighbour was George Jones, and he wanted me to work for him. And so that's where I ended up. George, he comes into a history story, because there's a little lad, one Sunday morning, he told me later, I went to work for him, and he always called me Leash. And so...
Why
it was, one Sunday morning, as people used to just sit out, we sat on the milk stand, him and Jack Horner, and I came back past as a little lad. And you always speak to all children. It's a way that we all do. I know today they think it's really funny. You've got to be careful. But I still, if I see anybody, I ask them what they're doing. Going to school. And George had always said, "What is your name?" And I was only a little lad. And I said, "Albert Lishford Calvert." I couldn't say Richard. And I went to work for him. He always called me Lish. Always. That was why. Little things.
It seems very often that people do have the nicknames. This seems to be something
In the Dale.
In the Dale.
Further up the Dale, not Well, yes, when you start to get a red mine up the dale, very much so, at horse, nearly everybody had a nickname.
Why do we think that is?
I have no idea. No. Well, I suppose there were so many big families with the sort of same names, and that's how they identified them to be different.
Yeah, very good point. Yeah.
I suppose
that makes
so.
Sense. Yeah.
Jammy George and all these people. We all know them.
Why was he called Jammy George?
I have no idea, but I know Jammy George used to play football, so everybody knew Jammy George. Jammy George.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that sounds perfect. And so your first job with the joiner, and then from that you then progressed to...
Right, well, the thing is, I wanted to work for myself. Well, I'd always been scheming something all my life to try to better myself. Mm. You see, coming from a poor background, it's a natural thing, you see.
Mm.
And I always wanted to be farming. And so I'd worked on the Bolton estate for them, because we did the decorating after the war. I decorated Bolton Hall and all the big houses and things like that. I put miles and miles of wallpaper on every day.
Gosh. They would have had the money to do that
Yeah. And, but you were starting, this is another story, but in the people that we worked for, the ordinary people started to have decorating done after the war. That's where there's I have a lot of stories on that.
Yes,
and so I worked at Bolton Hall and I thought, right, when I saw Lord Bolton, I said, could he put my name down? Would he consider me for being a tenant on a farm? And he said, yeah. And he would look if anything came up. Obviously, nothing ever did come up. And anyway, I was working at Castle Bolton, at Castle Bank Farm, just outside Castle Bolton, because I lived at the next house to where I lived. And a lad, Dennis Lambert, who was a friend, served his apprenticeship with me, under me. And he always knew that I wanted to work for myself. And he came back. We were working at Castle Bolton. He went for his dinner. I went for my dinner. We came back. And then said to me, Albert, do you know that Bolton Castle is coming up? The tenants are moving out. Are you interested? And in them days, I rode a motorbike. I mean, say 500. And I thought, I'm going to see. I jumped on my motorbike, I went to Bolton Hall, so I asked if I could see Lord Bolton. Yeah, he took me in. I told him what I'd come for, and I went back within an hour, back, and then says, how have you gone on? I says, I've taken Bolton Castle. I'd never been in it.
No.
Lived there, Bob and me had been, to because they did, it wasn't open like it is today, when we were, but it was open sometimes, and we had been, but it was always closed when we'd been, so I'd never been in the place.
This is actually Bolton Castle.
The castle, yeah, the castle.
There's rooms inside that you could live in.
Well, I'll tell you about that. Yes, yes, they did live, because the Harrisons lived there, and there was quite a big family of them. But they didn't, all they did was open it, and I thought, right, well, if we're going there, it was a good place to cater. Mm. And in 1960, I moved in there. I opened it up. We had to do a lot of work ourselves, because the arrangement was that I was in the castle, I was responsible for looking after, keeping it tidy, and taking the money at the door. I got a percentage of that money, and the rest went to Bolton Estate. So I thought, right, well, I said that I would like to cater in it. So we set off to cater, and I was there 12 years, and worked very hard every hour that came. I thought it would, when I got the thing, I thought, oh, it'd be dead easy, you know, after having to go out to work. And God did I get it wrong. When you work for yourself, how different it is. And so... that was it, and I had 12 years there, and 1960.
No, back.
1960, I was there till 72.
And the sort of work you're saying is repair of the castle. Was there restrictions on what you could
do? No. I mean, all I did was just organise a big room into a dining room. Mm-hmm. The upstairs room we use for a wedding venue. And it wasn't the easiest place to work because, yeah, you had a kitchen that was far in for the vegetables and washing up, and the kitchen that I ran was for the cooking of the hot food and things like that.
What sort of hot food did you...
Ordinary basic. We had good quality, mm-hmm. basic food. Mm-hmm. We got into the Good Food Guide. We had weddings for all over the country.
Wow.
All over the country. Wow. And, yeah... And our biggest problem was getting into trouble because we couldn't take people in. Because we had a wedding on, you see, and things like that.
Yeah.
And so that's where we did.
And did you sleep in the castle, did you?
When I first went, yes.
Yeah.
And it was so hot.
Hot?
Like an oven,
really?
You say.
Why?
It's all vaulted, solid stone. Mm-hmm. You're cooking in the kitchen. I had a big fan at the end of the kitchen. To keep you, or else you couldn't have worked. Your temperature would have been terrific, and that went all the time, run all the time. That's why on a night, when the policeman often used to call, come in and he used to creep in, but he always knew, and he never knew how I knew. When he opened that outside door, that fan made a noise. I never told him to this day. Well, I said I heard you.
And would you pop into?
Pop in for a cup of tea.
Yes.
You see, so...
Because, I mean, with the police, was that like a local policeman? I mean,
obviously... Yes, a local policeman. Policeman was... We also had a policeman at Redmayo. Yeah, yeah.
And when you were at Wensley, was there a separate policeman there in each village?
No, I lived at Preston under Sky. Not Preston, not Wensley. I didn't live at Wensley, just went to Wensley School.
Oh, it's Wensley School, sorry.
Wensley School. But yes, the same policeman was at Wensley.
Wow. It,
that would be his run, you see.
Yeah. A lot of walking miles.
Yeah. But policemen were only on bikes then, on push bikes. They weren't in any vehicle. And they had points where they had to ring back in the telephone kiosk, yeah.
Yeah, so they were.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't have a telephone kiosk in Preston until 1930. Yeah, just before the war. One telephone everybody would use that. Jim Willis, the lensman who was responsible from top of the old gate to Wednesday for keeping the roads clean and tidy, was a man who was a short-tongued man, and short-tongued. When he spoke, and so one, we were young lads. This is a little story I can tell you. We had snow, and of course the headquarters for the snowplough was at Leyburn. And Jim goes into the kiosk, lifts the telephone up. In them days, you lifted the telephone up, you dialed the number, and when they answered at the other end, you'd put your money in into the thing, and when they answered at the other end, you pressed button B. You see, so the conversation went like this. You move from Preston, can you send Powell? Send Powell to Preston. And nothing was happening, you see. He hadn't pressed button B, he didn't know, so he popped in and pressed it for him.
Because you wouldn't know not using it.
No, of course, nobody knew. We were frightened of using it. It wasn't an easy thing to do, to use a telephone.
Did you get one at Bolton Castle? Was that the first telephone that you actually ended up having in your house? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah. No, we had one before then. before the 60s, yes, yeah. We had people started to have telephones, yeah. I mean, we had one for work. I mean, at the work we had one and things like that where I worked. But not everybody would have them because there was no need for them.
No.
See, my dad always had a friend at Bellaby, which is, 5 miles from Preston, they wrote letters to one another. Yeah, that was it.
Yeah.
Did
you write letters? Did you?
Yes, we all wrote letters.
Yeah.
I can't hold a pen today. That's why, good job we've got the computer. And yes. So I wouldn't be able to do it because my hands are bad. That is one thing that...
It's the one advantage of change,
Yeah, it's a great way to just put me, because I, well,
I
didn't use it for a long time.
No. I know we can keep talking for hours and have a glass of water.
No, do you want a coffee or tea? Because Anne's left you some stuff there.
No, we're all right at the
right,
moment.
Go on then.
I did want to know if you'd ever seen a ghost at Bolton
no.
Castle.
No. If there'd been any ghost, I'd have been the first to run. Because always, I can tell you this, when I went out at night, because all the staff was to take home, you see, and it was my job when I finished, I would run them home. Mrs. Spencer would stop in with the people who were still having drinks and things. By the time I got back, she would have locked up, and I would go back into the castle, go to the top of the tower, because there was a door on the top that used to be left open, and it clashed. And every night did I go up to that top in the dark and close that door. If there'd been any ghost, I'd have been the first to run. No, it wasn't weird. It isn't like that. A thing would happen. I would go into the castle at 8 o'clock in the morning. This was after when I moved out and lived in a house in the village. I'd go in there a morning, lovely morning, you know, sun shining. I would meet somebody. Somebody would come in at maybe 10 or 11 o'clock, and I would say to him, lovely day. And I would see the look, I'd tell on the look on the face, I'd cocked up the day had changed. You didn't know. You never heard wind. There was no wind, you know, anything like that.
Wow.
No.
Yes.
But, I mean, the thing was, we were broke into, well, we weren't broke into, people had stopped in and robbed. Took all my clothes. All the money in the tills, which was only silver, and things like that. Oh. And he was a person who'd worked for us. Didn't know he'd been in every jail there was. Mm. I caught him 6 months later running a child.
Mm.
In business, mm-hmm. where he had people looking after children, and so he could get into all these places then. And the only thing that they could prove that he had my hold off, he'd take me hold off to take me stuff in.
So you could recognise that and knew it was him.
He paid with half crowns at North Allerton station. He got a taxi during the night to take him to North Allerton station. Made it quite clear that he was going to London, and of course he was going the opposite way. They got him in.
Yes.
Yeah, that was it.
Did you use the trains a lot? Because that's one of the
things. Well, trains. Well, the train was at Wednesday Station. Well, it's halfway. It's just north of Bolton Hall, where the guy back into there. You see. We'd use the trains, everybody would use them, but there was buses running, you see. But they didn't come into the village, you walked down to the bottom of the road to get the buses.
Yes. Yeah.
But there was trains, yes, because lots of people didn't have watches. And so you'd take it, my dad always took the time by the train.
Interesting, yeah. So you'd know that...
That train, when it went up.
It was time. Mm. Yeah, yeah.
And he would tell you when the days would be getting lighter, because you'd see the 5 train go up, and so, and everything was judged. You know, lots of people just took the time by the train.
Rather than church clocks.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, when you were working out in the fields, there was no church clocks and things like that. Yeah.
I'm going to ask some dialect questions because I know you've got lots of lovely things to also... and one of the questions I've got here is, what does dialect mean to you? What would you say if you were to think of the word dialect?
Well, it's just a way that people learn to talk, you see, because where they would get these words from, lots of these will be... when the Danes came, you see, and whatever the people that came into the place, You see, when people came to work, we got people working from Lancashire, so we picked up Lancashire words. You'd pick up the miners, you'd pick up probably Cornish people. As people work, the only people that moved was when people came to work. And that's where you get the different dialects.
Was there a favourite word that you learned, that you picked up, that you realised you were using that you hadn't before?
No, not really, because, you see, it was a way of life. We didn't know there was a dialect. Well, you'd be pulled up if you'd said anything. You would be told that wasn't a word.
Yes. Can you remember a word that you might have used that you were told that isn't a word?
Not really, because it just was a way of life. It's just the same as history.
Yes.
I mean, it's just there.
Yeah. Mm.
It happens. My dad would use lots of these words. That's where I'd pick them. And other people would.
Yeah.
I maybe use some today, but don't know I'm using them.
No.
I have no idea.
And so, maybe
would you say I had a Yorkshire accent, you see? I don't know. Yes, some people say, you've got a hell of a strong accent. This is it, you see, so we don't know. Mm. But we do know where people come from. I mean, I can tell a person who comes, well, we had a person who joined Rotary. And I said, I know where she comes from, Middlesbrough, you see. And you see, we had a lot of people come from Middlesbrough to the quarries, to work in the quarries.
So you recognise the accent?
Somehow you do, without knowing you do. You don't know you do. There's lots of things you know without knowing you know. You would probably have, but when I went to Redmay, definitely, I noticed straight away there were certain words were used that I wasn't used to, different things.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember one thing, there's a plant we call a kelk, and when I went to Redmay, it was called a keksie. That's the only word I can ever remember.
How interesting that, yeah. And so you looked at the plant.
Yeah, we saw it every day. It's a wild thing that grows in the thing.
Yeah. But they just called it entirely different.
Yeah. No. A clodhopper. A clodhopper.
What's a clodhopper?
Somebody walking. He's a great clodhopper. I have no idea. To get these odd words, I mean, I have a word that I'd never heard. I only ever remember one person saying, which I mentioned in here, that's "Do it, Melanie."
Say again.
"Do it, Melanie."
And what does that mean?
Well, it means don't harm him. But it was only Ernest Burnett, I remember Ernest, he was the only man who ever said that, and he often used to say, "Now do it, Melanie, lads."
Just as his turn of phrase,
that would
be his expression. Were there other people within the villages that had a phrase like that you'd remember?
Ernest was the only one who used that phrase. Mm. I remember it well, because it was a word that nobody else used. "Do it, I, plover."
Could be some farming terms, maybe, that your father passed down.
Oh, yes, yeah. My dad came to Swirldale, you see.
Yes.
He came to Swirldale. Yes, artery. Yes, I know what artery is. A head in the artery.
Say again, sorry.
A head in the artery.
What does that mean?
Artery is part of the gate. Hundreds of them. hundreds of heads in arteries.
So that's what someone would ask for. They'd say, "We need this." And you'd know straight
away.
No, well,
you know which it was, you're putting the head on an artery. It could be on a mowing machine. I don't know.
Well,
a swingle tree. Could be a swingle tree.
No, what is it?
Well, it's one of the clashes.
How do you mean clash? When you open it?
Well, no, it's cheek. Yeah, cheek. This was a bit cheap.
When you say cheap,
if this was a gate,
oh, actually, you've got the mic.
Go on.
Sorry, go on. Yep. Don't worry.
If that was that's cheek.
When you say cheek,
yeah,
as in. Ooh,
sorry, I didn't realize.
No, don't worry.
Do it.
I would do the same.
You're gonna wreck ruination.
Cheek, meaning closed.
No,
it's okay. Yeah. because I'm guessing there'll be phrases as well from joinery.
Oh, yes, 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 hundreds of them. I mean,
they must have been passed down.
Well, yes, they are. This is it. We all have different names for parts. Every part of a barrow, every part of a cart, all that. Yes, I was a wheelwright.
Wow.
I made rails, I can tell you. The naff, which is the naff, and that's a word, you see. No, the naff is the hub.
Right.
The spokes, is spokes. Fellies is the outer rim. The metal that goes inside the rim.
The rim.
Rim, yeah. I'll tell you how to make a gate. I'll make a wheel, right. You would, the always, the naff, as we would call it, the hub, was elm. It always, these are the timbers that's always used, was elm. Piece of elm, very hard to stand. You turn that out on the lathe. Pedal with the lathe. Pretty killing. No electricity. Right. And then you set out all by the eye. There's nothing you can use. There's nothing that you can set out with. Everything is done by the eye. You cut out for the spokes with a big long chisel square. Each spoke, right, every other spoke. Right, that you're coming out of the hub now. That all on a little angle, you see, up. So it's dish. That's the dish, and each one is slightly different. And then that is fit in into the hub, and the other part is cut out to put onto the felly. Right. Now then, the felly, the spoke is ash, is oak, always oak. And then the felly is ash. Now then you cut the fellies out of a flank of wood. We would bring the wood into the sawing, slab it into slabs, into 3-inch slab that would be, and then you'd cut for different wheels. We had patterns, like you're making a dress, a wood pattern, thin pattern, so many hundreds of different sorts. And you'd know exactly what pattern you needed for that wheel, just out of ordinary wood.
Right.
It's ordinary wood. And you'd draw them out with a pencil, put them onto the bandsaw, cut them round on the bandsaw. Then you'd take them into your vise, put them into your vise. And you would, with a spoke shave, you would get them until they were absolutely perfect. And then you would cut out for the spokes, right? And then you would, to make the wheel up, you had a big stool, four-leg stool, legs around that, open in the centre, so the wheel dropped onto there. And then you'd get it ready for assembling, you'd get the spokes in, run it round, and then you'd cut out for the fellies to go on, and then the fellies that went onto the wheel, onto the spokes. You've got your spokes out like that, all the way around. You'd have a felly would go from there to there, and that would be have its holes out ready for it like that. And then to get them to go in so that they fit in there, you had a thing that just clamped over and tightened the fellies up and you slipped them on. Hmm. Now then, at them joints, that felly joining onto that other felly there, you always had to have a gap. This was all by eye, a gap, so that when you put them on there, there was that fine gap. And then when the wheel was put together, it was there. You ran round with a wheel, like you've seen highway people, to see how far it was. You run round your rim. It was generally a rim you were using, that had been used before. Yes, often that's why it was. You weren't often making new ones. And you'd have that so much bigger than the rim. And then when the blacksmith took it, when you came to putting the rim on, he took the wheel outside. The blacksmith would get the rim red hot. He'd carry it out onto things, two big sort of big plies, as you might say. Carry it out, drop it on there, put it onto there, hammer it on quickly, and throw water on it. And that all them gaps would tighten perfect.
Gosh, wow.
They had a little dowel in between them. They had a little dowel in them, yeah. A little wood dowel. And that pulled it all together. And then they had a little bit of dish on. So it wasn't straight, because it would have collapsed if it was straight. It had that little bit of dish. And it pulled it to perfect tight.
Wow.
And a good blacksmith, a rim would never come off. Now then, the man who came, there was a Preston blacksmith, who hadn't been brought up in the country. He wasn't good at that.
No.
The blacksmith at Redmire, Jim Robinson, as they called him, Tag, a little fella, very excitable chap. He could do anything. He'd go out into the hayfield and repair a machine that had broken. And that's how they did. There wasn't engineers coming out and doing them things. All the things that broke down, you had to go for him because he had no transport. Bring him onto the field and he'd repair it and things like that. He shoed horses, all them things.
Wow.
Yeah. They're Gunnerside, yeah, well, I don't know because I've gone through Gunnerside because we renovated Gunnerside Lodge 25 years ago. So, but I don't know. So but that's it.
Who taught you to do that?
I was an apprentice, I went there.
And that, literally, that was your first...
You just did it. Yeah. You just did it. I mean, you serve 5 years as an apprentice and 2 years as an improver. But if you couldn't do it in the first 6 months, you were worth nothing. I mean, I was doing all these things. I look back and I would make... In them 80 years, well over 100 coffins.
Wow. Yes.
You see? Yeah. Well, I mean, they all come, because they'd be probably plastic, I don't know what the hell they are now, they'd be made on a machine. But when we made a coffin, you went out and measured the corpse to see what size it was, you come back, and you got your set of coffin boards. The bottom board was always, again, elm, rough as blazes, knots all over it. and then you got your two sides, they were just boards, and a board for the end, and the top was also a big board cut out, and you set off and you cut it to shape, you cut it to shape, then you put the ends on, two ends and just there, and then you put the side on. And of course, he had got to go over the side, over the shoulder. So at the shoulder, you cut through with your saw like that. You see, to make it back. And then you poured, when you would fix it at this end, to start with, and then you'd have to bend it. But before you put it on, you'd get boiling water, and pour it over it to soften it to get it down, and then you'd pull it round. Yeah.
To get the shape. Yeah.
Get the bend perfectly.
Yeah.
And then you put it on, and then when you got your box made, as we call it, the box, you would lay the lid on the top, and you just run your fingers round underneath, the width of your finger, right round there, and that you cut that out the same and dress that up and screw that on. And then you put all your fancy prints on and things like that. And then inside, was first thing you did was boil your pitch, put your pitch in, because all your knots were to cut into your pitch, and all your joints. Mm. And you twisted the coffin all the way, run it round when it was hot, and then it dried, and that was it.
And that was it, sealed it.
And yes. then that was it. And then in the bottom you'd put shavings. And then
wood shavings.
Wood shavings, clean wood shavings. and you put wood shavings in the pillar, and then you align it with the aligning, all fastened up on, tacked up onto the lid, onto the top of the box, as we called it, and then you put your frillings round, and it looked all superb. Mm-hmm. And then you would screw your toe,
gosh,
and then you would go to put the corpse in the coffin. George was undertaker, the boss, best undertaker you ever saw. Wow. 6'4" he was. There was me 5'8" stretched.
Gosh.
And when there was anything to lift, he always had me lift. Okay. And you can imagine the weight that I took with him being up there and me being down there. But I was the strongest lad in the firm.
Yeah. So it was actually an undertaker's...
The undertaker's, yes.
Yes.
Best, wonderful undertaker. Mm-hmm. Very smart. 6'4" he was. Very smart. Very, yeah. Most bad-tempered person you ever knew in your life. I worked with him 18 years and we never fell out, and I'm bad-tempered.
Oh.
If anybody says the wrong thing to me, I'm very easy going. But you've just got to. Yes. George always used to interview when you introduce him to anybody new. He'd say, "Well, Albert's good to get on with," but he says you'll always know if you've gone far enough. And this was the thing. And he says he takes his hammer and he goes like that. And he says, "If he ever does that, don't go any further." And I didn't know I did it, but I do.
Well, we're better
not giving
you a hand
with that. Yes, exactly. I love it. With the wood, you were saying, the different types of wood, was that all grown locally? Was that from...
No, you bought it. You
bought it.
It came in from Perth Rain Prosser at Leeds. Yes, yeah, it came by train, you see. And the name that you got, you always got that engraved. And it was sent by train. Everything came by train. All our wallpaper, when we were decorating, we did an awful lot of decorating, that you'd order it today and it'd come on the train tomorrow.
Gosh. And you were saying with the training, so you trained as an apprentice and then you said you had 2 years as a...
Improver.
And what does that mean?
Not a lot. A cheap way of labour.
Right. And the improving was with another company?
No, it could be at
the same company.
No, yeah, the same company. Yeah. I worked there 18 years.
Gosh.
Yeah. I couldn't start in my own business, being in opposition to my boss. That's why I had to look for something else. There's no way can you do that. There's things you do and things you don't do. I'd worked with George all them years, known him from being a little lad. I'd go into a joiner's shop on the morning and look at George and not speak to him. Because I say nothing to George. No, he doesn't want to speak to him today.
I could
understand him, but I never fell out with him. Mm-hmm. Lots of lads couldn't understand him, but I understood him. Mm-hmm. He was good to me. I mean, when work was over, I worked with him 18 years, and never 1 minute did he say, "We'll have 2 minutes off." And if I ever asked for a day off, he would never say, "Yes, I could have it." I used to have to take him. But I understood him. As you do.
Oh.
I mean, brought up next door neighbour to him. Yeah, I don't do all of that.
So we can take a little break now, if you'd like. We've got a whole load of photographs to show you.
Yeah.
That would be the end. So I know if you'd like to have a break, or should we do that and then have a, and then finish off and have a cup of tea.
Right, finish off when we. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.